Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report and a company update today, this time from Silvercrest Metals, traded on the TSX under the symbol SIL and on the NYSE under the symbol SILV. I'm chatting with the president, Chris Ritchie. Now Chris, first things first, let's follow up on a news release that came out last week, a new discovery at the Las Chispas project. Now, this discovery is called the El Muerto Zone, which is outlined here as 500 meters along strike, but I think even more importantly, 100 to 200 meters below the current resource at the Bobby Canora vein. Now, some of the headline numbers out of this release was 1.5 meters, grading over 2,600 grams per ton silver equivalent. Also, another 1 meter, grading a little over 1,400 grams per ton silver equivalent. Chris, just give us a quick little update on the potential significance of this new discovery on the project.
Thanks, Corey. Sure. The biggest thing for us on this vein is it's the first time we've poked around at a slightly deeper zone to depth. So if you think of a layer cake, this is a new horizon that is just slightly below the existing horizon that we've been drilling into for the last few years. So, you know, right now, the discovery that we just announced applies to just below the Bobby Canora main vein. The theory, which again is yet to be proven, is that that horizon might also apply to the other veins in the Las Chispas area. So again, too soon to tell, but if, you know, we'll keep drilling and we'll keep poking around, and if we find, we can confirm that theory, then it just opens up a lot more blue sky potential to, again, just a different zone beneath this vein, or hopefully more of the veins in that area. So again, just more blue sky in the Las Chispas area.
Chris, give us a little bit more color on what you mean that this could apply to other veins on the project. What's significant about that?
Well, again, this is a horizon that's parallel to the surface. So again, if that zone just keeps applying and keeps spreading across the particular area, it gives us a whole new target to shoot for across not only this vein, but the Bobby Norte vein, the Bobby Sur vein, the Bobby Vista vein. So again, if this theory holds true, then it gives us a really nice runway to hopefully keep growing the resource base. And it's not that much deeper. I mean, it's only, as you mentioned, 100 to 200 meters deeper than what we're currently drilling on, which means accessing any material we might find down here a lot easier and not very expensive. So part of the pushback we sometimes get is that our property itself isn't, you know, that large. I mean, it certainly packs a punch. But if we can show another horizon below the existing vein structure that we have, then it is very significant in terms of upside potential and the resource growth.
So what sort of follow-up work is either planned or ongoing right now to potentially prove that this whole other horizon, this lower horizon, applies almost property-wide?
Yeah, we've been very methodical in our drilling. I mean, we've spent about $85 million to date just on the drilling. And, you know, our last resource in May of 2019 had roughly 88 million ounces in the mine plan. So again, we've been very methodical. So now that we've found a new theory to go after, we're going to continue to be methodical and efficient with our shareholder capital. So we're going to keep poking around on El Muerto. And now that we're underground, it's also easier to sort of to drill a little bit deeper down when you're underground. Because in drilling, as everyone knows, you pay by the meter. So when you're underground and you can have rigs underground, you save a lot of money. Not all these rigs or not all these targets will be able to be drilled from underground, but it gives you a sense of, you know, how we are being quite prudent with the cash. So we'll see, but it's definitely going to be a key part of our drilling strategy for 2021.
Okay, final comment just on this new discovery, because I think it is important to see this new discovery. I was getting a lot of comments from listeners saying, what about new discoveries on the project? Now we have one. In the news release, it says the weighted average of these drill results to date is 1.1 meters, grading just short of 800 grams per ton silver equivalent. How does this compare to, say, the Bobby Canora vein or anything else on the project?
Well, first of all, if you had a silver equivalent grade of roughly 350 grams per ton, you'd be in the top 20 highest grade projects in the world. So just for context, that's already more than double for that. In terms of the rest of the grade of the property, in our last resource, the average grade was 723 grams per ton. So it's slightly higher than that. So again, this is high grade. And high grade translates into high margin. And it's critically important for a project like ours because high margins helps whether gold or silver is high or low. So again, it protects, you know, the shareholders. If gold and silver happen to go down, we still can hopefully have very high margins and high free cash flow.
Well, something that the market will see here coming up, from my understanding, is the feasibility study, too. And it was even said that this new zone is going to be included in the updated resource and this feasibility study. Can you give us an update on timing of the feasibility study, first and foremost, please?
Sure, we're plugging away on that. We think it's going to be kind of near complete, probably in mid-December. And then I think everyone's going to be happy to get the year over with. So we'll probably come out with that feasibility study in early in January when people have a bit more of attention span from that. What's left to do on that is, you know, finish up the mine plan that's coming out, you know, work on what's called an EPC contract, which stands for engineering, procurement, and construction. So that's us working with a third party to help us build the project. And that would be on a fixed price basis. So they give you a price, and if there's a capital overrun, they pay for it. If they execute well and there's a bit of a savings on it, they participate in the upside of that. So again, for investor standpoint, there's you know, limited exposure to capital overruns with that part of the project, which is great. We're working on a financing strategy. And that comes with, you know, some debt that we're working towards. We don't want to lean on the debt. We want to use a prudent amount of debt. And for us, that means something that hopefully is something that can be paid back within half a year to a year and a half, depending on in market conditions and how we execute. So not overly aggressive. And then we'll need some equity as well, which, you know, we'll probably deal with sometime in Q1. But we do have $135 million of cash, and we do have, hopefully we'll have the debt in place by then. And we've done the hard work on the financing. You know, we've done six financings in the last 3 years. And for us now at the share price today, for the type of money we're looking for, it should all be sub 10% dilution. So again, we're not that sensitive to the share price for any future capital raise we might do. So again, that would be a massive de-risking event. And we're hoping that this would be the last chunk of capital that we would need. So again, that's a huge stepping stone, is putting out that feasibility study and being able to charge forward with construction starting hopefully in early January.
So what updates can you give us when it comes to the overall CapEx of the project? When you and I chatted in the past, it was sitting at, let's say, about $140 million. What changes are you anticipating when it comes to the feasibility study? Because quite frankly, $140 million for a market cap that is Silvercrest, as you said, it's less than 10% dilution.
Yeah, the way we're looking at capital is you always want to have a chunk of capital that is, you know, in your back pocket at all times. So that's probably going to be in the $15 million range. You want to have about $25 million for working capital. And what that's used for is the first 3-6 months or so, if you're having problems with the mill, that you have some money to kind of get through any of the growing pains associated with that. We're going to have 2 years of G&A and overhead and, you know, COVID-related costs that go into that. Drilling, we want to drill very aggressively. And again, that's going to be success dependent, but we're hoping to drill about 70% of the total dollars worth since we started the company. So again, if our success rate is anywhere in the same neighborhood, that's hopefully a lot of resource growth during that time frame. All that adds up into the neighborhood of about $160 million US of additional capital that we need. So again, it's going to be in a blend of equity and debt. And within that, we're also going to have a nice buffer. We really don't need to be overly cute or aggressive in financing this. We want to make sure any of the investors who want to participate through the construction phase just have a lot of risk management security associated with that time frame. But they get the upside of moving towards cash flow. And again, hopefully there's a lot of resource growth that occurs during that time. So again, one metric, Corey, that is probably worth noting, back in, you know, June, if you count all of the shares that were traded from June until now, it's roughly about $800 million worth of stock that's traded from that time frame. So anyone who knows Silvercrest, who's been paying attention to the market, would know that we've been very fortunate to have a nice performance leading up to that time frame. And we did really well despite the gold and silver price. We did really well because our technical team and our drilling team were doing a fantastic job. But when gold and silver started moving, it was a very natural rotation for people to sell Silvercrest and buy some of the stocks that were more sensitive to the gold and silver price that hadn't performed yet. So again, that's part of that $800 million that have transitioned out of the story from, you know, from June till today. But the stock's held in really well, right? We're still kind of hovering near long-time highs. So it gives investors, or hopefully gives investors, some comfort that the people that were overweight the stock were able to right-size their positions. New entrants coming into the space were able to get a position. So I think it's also just gives people some clarity that we're in a pretty healthy spot. And the recent move we've seen upwards the other day, and then the recent move we saw downwards yesterday, just gives you a sense that we're still fairly range bound, and that it's a pretty healthy, a healthy stock in terms of where it's trading right now.
Yeah, fair enough. But even on the back of this new discovery, the stock did move up about 20% in 2 days, 15% just the day that it was announced. So it does show that there's still a lot of people following this story and, quite frankly, excited about the exploration. Let's get a quick comment on the overall industry, though. We have gotten a lot of the numbers from Q3, the financials from the majors all looked very strong. You can make the argument that the sector is very healthy, thanks to higher metals prices and relatively depressed energy prices, but there's still the argument that stocks are undervalued compared to where the metals price is. How do you consider where the stocks stand compared to the overall sector here?
Yeah, that's what I think is the most curious part of this conversation, is that if you looked at the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index, and it's a basket of commodities, whether it's oil, copper, lead, zinc, agriculture, natural gas. So it's a basket of commodities. And if you compare the value of that basket to the S&P or the Dow, and you put that on a 100-year plus chart, that hard assets or commodities have not been this cheap relative to the broader market in over 100 years. So to see, you know, the stimulus, the money printing, and some of the underlying things that are really important to get the gold market going happen when, you know, the sector itself is trading at the cheapest it's been in close to 100 years, that's a really nice starting point. And what we saw in Q3 was a really big increase in free cash flows. So the margin expansion that we've seen with the gold price lifting translated into earnings. And you saw some monstrous free cash flow numbers coming out of all the producers, you know, some 30, 40% free cash flow yields. And regardless if gold and silver goes higher or not, if that keeps going for 1, 2, 3, 4 more quarters, you're going to see index rebalancing go higher for the gold and silver space. You're going to see mutual funds that have to hug the index, or people that are you know, playing catch up to the index, have to increase their weighting to the gold and silver space. You're going to see quant funds that are tracking momentum and earnings growth and dividend growth start screening and finding the gold and silver space. And this is a tiny sector. So again, just 1, 2, 3, 4 more quarters of modest upside with current prices. And I think it's going to be really hard not to have significant, you know, investor funds come into the space. So that 20% move you saw in us, I don't think it was the news. The news was nice. It was supportive. I think it was the quant funds jumping into the sector. And that's going to also dovetail, I think, really nicely into the precious metals funds themselves. You know, you'll start the new calendar year, and there's a good chance they start to see inflows. And if they have inflows, that means they need to invest more dollars. So again, that kind of ties back to our comment that we traded almost $800 million of value from June till now, that those people who were overweight our stock were sellers, you know, and they kind of right-sized their portfolio. So for those people, if they do get new inflows and they're new entrants, It's potentially really positive for the space. One other data point I received from a broker was that there was an IPO for a silver company a couple weeks ago, and they told us that there were 41 players on that IPO, and 31 of the 41 did not own Silvercrest. And I've turned over a lot of rocks in the last few years. We've raised a lot of money. So the fact that there's 31 entrants that don't own us gives me a lot of, you know, confidence that there are new entrants coming into the market. And over 60% of those players were in the U.S. And again, in the U.S., it's not their typical sectors that they look at. So again, it just gives us a sense that it is actually just starting to perk up. And we could actually be at inning two, inning three of a long, prolonged bull market, as opposed to kind of, you know, nearing the tops. So I think that's a good underlying start to the sector. And then you kind of look at what happened yesterday with the vaccine news. You know, gold's down $100. But the stocks, you know, they took a bit of a hit, but generally speaking, they're hanging in pretty well. And there's two dynamics there. One, we're not out of the woods yet in terms of risk. There's a lot more things to sort out, and we're certainly not out of the woods in terms of seeing how the economy functions, having to stand on its own 2 feet without stimulus. If things do bounce back nicely, which we all hope they do for everybody's sake, well, then the velocity of the money that's already been created and already put into the economy starts to increase. And that's a huge function of inflation. So I think, you know, part of the move up in gold with Biden coming in was the thought that there was going to be a lot more stimulus coming, regardless of the risk part of the trade here. So, again, I think the setup is really great. And I'm really looking forward to see what happens in the new year when all the fund managers have to start over from scratch in terms of deciding where to allocate their funds to, you know, have their new year's performance metrics to catch up to. So I think we're off to a racing start so far.
May interesting insights in terms of some of the new entrants into the sector overall. Chris, I'm sure we're going to be chatting again soon. I know the company has a lot of news on tap. I also know that you have to run. So thank you very much for the update today. If anybody has any follow-up questions, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. I will get those answered for you. And in the meantime, Chris, we'll chat again as some more news hits the market. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Corey. Appreciate it.